oil production is booming here in the United States, in part because of innovations in fracking technology. While concerns about the environmental impact are common, there are hopes that the boost in domestic production can make gas prices lower, more stable, decrease our reliance on foreign sources for oil, and help dial back U.S. military efforts in the Middle East as a result. But our next guest, an energy and international relations expert, says don't get too excited just yet, because domestic oil production isn't going to bring us to energy security, especially in the long run. With us now is Steve Yativ. He's professor of international relations at Old Dominion University. He's the author of the new book, Myths of the Oil Boom, American National Security in a Global Energy Market. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So in your book, Steve, you set out to bust what you call some myths about the American oil boom. One, that the oil boom will substantially lower oil prices and our gas prices at the pump. It seems like supply and demand. Why wouldn't that be the case?
Well, I do think that it is the case in the short run, and will be the case for the foreseeable future. The book looks a little farther down the road, a few years from now. And the case, I think, will be different then. For example, the American oil boom is not supposed to run forever. It's produced a lot of oil and done some good things, but even the U.S. Department of Energy sees the American oil boom as peaking around 2019. Now, a lot of things will affect that, but even if it peaks later, it's not going to be a factor in the coming decades. So first thing is that it is going to peak in a few years. The second thing is that so far the Arab countries like Saudi Arabia have not cut production to offset the American oil boom. But they're under enormous pressure at home to service their cradle-to-grave societies. They give subsidies for everything to their people, and they're running budget deficits. So they can only tolerate lower oil prices for so long, maybe a couple more years, but eventually I think they will also shift their policy. So the American oil boom is producing a lot of energy, which is positive, but I see down the road countervailing measures.
Another topic you tackle is the notion that with more domestic oil production, this is something you hear from politicians a lot of the time, if we produce more oil domestically, we're going to care less about the global oil market, be less vulnerable to price changes on that market. You, in the medium to long term, at least, don't buy that.
Yeah, all things equal, the more oil on the global market, the better for oil prices. In that sense, the American oil boom is pressuring oil prices. But some people think, for instance, that this will allow us to leave the Persian Gulf. And there's a lot of discussion about that. Even the Arab countries in the region are worried that the U.S. will leave. The thing is, though, that the global price of oil is set on global market. And if the U.S. left the Persian Gulf and there was some huge conflict there because the police officer is gone, and oil prices rocketed, that would come back to hit the American consumer, because the consumer is paying the global price of oil on markets. It doesn't matter how much exactly is produced where.
Yeah, as I understand it, and I think you mentioned this in your book, the United States doesn't really get that much of its oil directly from the Middle East. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It gets about 13%, which is a whole lot less than Europe or Japan or China.
But because those other countries get it, because it's a global market, you say even though we don't get our oil there, we're going to have a continued interest in stability there.
Exactly, because oil traders set the price of oil, and that happens mostly on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And if there's events in the Middle East that they think is going to disrupt oil prices, they're going to buy oil futures, send the price up, and that's what drives gas prices up. So if the U.S. is not in the Gulf and there's a problem there, prices go up, we're still paying more even if we're producing a ton at home.
And you say in the book, even absent oil, the United States and other countries would still probably have a strategic interest in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf. Why is that?
Yes, I think absent oil, the U.S. could decrease its commitment there, and that would be a good thing because it's been extremely costly. But at the same time, even without oil, there are other interests there. For example, the Islamic State, although I don't support any ground troops against it, is still an issue because of transnational terrorism potential there. So there's terrorism and there's other issues that would keep the U.S. engaged. Anyway.
And another myth, and this is one of your chapter titles, gasoline costs us what we pay at the pump. Why not?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest things. It's called externalities by economists. And the idea is that providing for oil, which we get gas from, has a lot of costs associated with it. For example, I looked at 11 extremely detailed studies about what it costs the U.S. to protect the Persian Gulf alone. And that's around $40 to $50 billion per year. And a lot of that is because there's oil there, although the U.S. is there for other reasons. In addition, oil and coal are the primary causes of climate change. And those costs are incalculable at this point, but we from scientific studies, know that they're high. So there are lots of costs associated with the gasoline that we use that aren't factored into the price at the pump.
We're talking to Steve Yativ. His new book is Myths of the Oil Boom, American National Security in a Global Energy Market. Well, that's the oil boom side of things, the production side of things. The second part of your book and the second part of your argument focuses on the consumption side of oil. You're making the case in your book that whatever we do with this domestic oil production, we should be looking for alternatives to radically bring down our oil consumption. What would you like to see?
Yes. The argument of the book in terms of policy is that, yeah, let's continue with the oil boom. But let's not think that that's all we need to do. Let's combine it with efforts to decrease oil consumption. And here I just want to emphasize a revenue-neutral gas tax. This is not a tax at all, but it's a tax on gasoline and carbon that we then offset with decreases in taxes on other things like payroll. It's been an idea that's been bandied around for a while, and it's got some Republican support because it's not really a tax. But it targets gasoline and carbon and therefore shifts consumer taste away from things that use gasoline and carbon. Another thing is, you know, putting more effort into high-performance vehicles because most of the world's oil is used in transportation. So if we can target the gas tank either through taxation or through efficiencies, that would do the most to decrease, you know, the use of oil.
Isn't this a hard sell? Because with this oil boom in the U.S., gas prices have gone down from their peak a few years back. Gas oil is abundantly available to us. So why are we going to be worrying at this moment about better gas mileage and alternatives to oil?
That's a good question. That is the threat that we can become complacent because we're producing oil. And producing oil and natural gas is fine, but we can't be complacent about it. Quite the contrary, because gas prices are lower, I think that it's a good time to consider raising the federal gasoline tax of 18.4 cents and engaging in these kinds of actions. Now, it could be sold to the consumer because studies show that although voters, consumers are against gasoline taxes by about 3-1, they have a different view of a revenue-neutral tax, which is not a tax really. So if some politicians could be a bit more bold in pushing a revenue-neutral gas tax, they might find that the public supports it. The alternative is to raise taxes on other things to fund our infrastructure. It has to be paid for in some way, and that's coming to roost soon, that they're going to have to raise funds for the highway fund. So you might as well raise them with a revenue-neutral gas tax that may have one revenue-raising dimension to it. And I think because gasoline prices are lower now, it's gonna affect the consumers you know, in terms of political taste, a little less strongly.
At one point in the book, he used the phrase moonshot alternative energy effort, something an equivalent to the Apollo program, I guess, to try to come up with oil, fossil fuel alternatives. Do you think the appetite is there to make that kind of upfront investment in alternatives to oil?
I'm not sure if the appetite's there yet, but I hope that it develops, and that will require good leadership, because the climate change issue is a serious one, and it's one that we need to address in a way that actually helps American business instead of hurts it. The United States has the best technology in the world and has the best companies in the world, and it has the potential to draw on all that great knowledge and innovation to be a leader in the world in clean energy. And so far, China is beating us to that clean energy market.
And turning back to national security, a lot of focus has been on the power of oil producers over the years. You say this could give us this kind of moonshot approach, developing alternative energy, breaking dependence on oil, could boost our national security, give us a lot of soft power on the world stage. How does that work?
Right, because soft power is the power of attraction, making your policies more attractive to others. And if the United States can lead on decreasing the use of carbon, that'll send a positive message around the world that it's on the right road, because now the United States has a reputation as the big gas guzzler of the world. And in part, it is a big gas guzzler because the U.S. economy is the biggest, but it also has that reputation like oil for war and so on and so forth. So if it changes its tune, its policies will be received better around the world, at least according to what the polls show.
Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Steve Yativ. He's a professor of international relations at Old Dominion University. We've been talking about some of the arguments he makes in his new book. It's called Myths of the Oil Boom: American National Security in a Global Energy Market.